Brought to you by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, this edition highlights key LinkedIn posts on field marketing in weeks 14 and 15. Frenis supports clients with identifying target attendees for events, crafting outreach that cuts through the noise, and driving qualified registrations through strategic LinkedIn engagement. You can find more info in the description.
So our mission today is highly specific. We are cutting straight through all the noise, you know, to bring you the top field marketing trends dominating the conversation across LinkedIn over the past 2 weeks.
Right. And to kick this deep dive off, I want you to imagine the scenario for a second. You spend like $100,000 to rent a beautiful venue.
Oh, easily.
Yeah. You build a custom booth, you fly out your executive team, and you throw this massive premium networking party for your top 500 prospects.
Sounds great so far.
Right. But then at the end of the week, you collect all their business cards, bring them back to the office, and literally throw 80% of them straight into the trash can.
Which is just, I mean, that sounds completely unhinged.
It does, doesn't it? But looking at the data and the insights we've curated for you today, that is exactly what the B2B event industry is doing, like on a daily basis.
It's a really painful reality check.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this while you're planning your Q3 or Q4 event footprint, looking at budgets, or just, you know, trying to prove to leadership that your field marketing actually drives pipeline, this deep dive is custom tailored for you.
Absolutely.
Because the overarching theme across these weeks of insights is this massive maturation in how events are being treated. We are finally seeing the industry abandon hope as a strategy.
I love that phrasing. And that actually brings up a traditional image we've all kind of accepted in event marketing, right? The relay race.
Oh, yeah. The classic handoff.
Exactly. The marketing team runs their leg. They put on a spectacular 3-day summit, capture the leads at the door, and then they enthusiastically pass the baton over to the sales team.
Right. Marketing builds the room and sales works the room.
Except, looking at the consensus from these industry experts, we've been running that relay race while wearing blindfolds.
Yeah.
The baton isn't just getting dropped, it's getting like hurled into the stands. And both departments are blaming each other. Which means we really need to look at our first major shift here. Strategy has completely moved upstream, and the era of the handoff is effectively dead.
It is dead.
Yeah.
Because fields marketing is no longer about on-site logistics. You know, it has to be an end-to-end strategic orchestration.
Right.
Lindsay Casale pointed this out beautifully. She noted that the exact same mistakes plague corporate events over and over. Teams just jump straight into logistics, booking the caterer, choosing lanyard colors long before they lock in an actual strategy.
Oh, the lanyard colors. Always the priority.
Right. They treat the entire event experience like a checklist to just get through.
Yeah.
And because everyone is so exhausted by the time the doors close, they completely skip the post-event debrief.
Which is wild considering the sheer amount of capital deployed. I mean, Eliza Bingle echoed this sentiment too. She argued that the hidden cost of events isn't financial or operational, it's strategic.
Yeah, exactly.
You cannot just fund an activity and hope that business value magically materializes later. The venue and the catering are just the setting. The strategy is the actual product.
That's a great way to look at it. And Amina Bajwa introduced this brilliant concept that perfectly diagnoses this issue. She calls it first event syndrome.
First event syndrome, okay.
Yeah, where too many marketers just start from scratch. Every single time they plan an event,
yeah.
There's no living checklist of what broke last time or, you know, what messaging resonated best.
They just reinvent the wheel.
Every single time.
Yeah.
They treat each project as a standalone exercise rather than treating every single event as actionable data to refine the next one.
That's like opening a second location of a restaurant, but intentionally throwing away the recipe book from the first one.
Right.
The chefs are just in the back guessing every single night. It guarantees inconsistency. And if strategy is moving upstream to fix this, it demands total, uncompromising alignment with the sales team.
It has to.
Ariel Moen made a stark observation here. She said, if an event strategy isn't built alongside sales from day one, it's probably not driving revenue. Events do not drive pipeline on their own. Partnership does.
And Estefania Ochoa took that a step further, actually. She argues that the entire concept of a handoff between event, marketing, and business development teams is structurally flawed.
Wait, how so?
Well, the handoff is the exact moment where the value gets lost. She says it shouldn't be a handoff at all. It should be continuity.
Okay, let me push back on this, though. At the end of the day, isn't it the sales team's job to close the deal? I mean, if marketing delivers a spreadsheet of 500 highly qualified people who attended a summit, Why is the event team taking the heat from the C-suite when those leads don't convert? Marketing did their job and they put the people in the room.
Well, that is where we have to confront that 80% statistic from earlier.
Right, the trash can.
Exactly. Rich Rodriguez provided this staggering data point. Roughly 80% of trade show leads are never followed up with. They just sit in the CRM decaying.
Wow, 80%.
Yeah. So Rodriguez is actually calling for sales teams to show a lot more empathy and respect for the event team's grind. Because ignoring those leads, I mean, it hurts the pipeline, destroys the event's return on investment, and damages the brand.
Okay, so if sales isn't involved in deciding who gets invited to the room or what the narrative of the conversation should be, those leads are just sterile names on a spreadsheet to them.
Exactly. There's zero context.
The sales rep has no idea if the prospect was highly engaged during a keynote or just, you know, grabbed a free pen and walked away.
Precisely. And if we're dropping 80% of our leads, the pressure to prove actual revenue impact, not just vanity metrics like attendance, gets significantly sharper. This leads right into our second theme.
Yeah, because we feel like the event went well is no longer an acceptable metric for the CFO.
Not at all. Matt Kleinrock sat down with over 50 corporate event marketers at Exhibitor Alive, and the consensus was a massive wake-up call.
Mm.
Yeah, most teams are still measuring mere activity. You know, leads scanned, badges printed, meetings booked. But the advanced teams, they are measuring impact. They're rigorously tracking pre-event, in-event, and post-event pipeline movement.
Right, because Nihal Chu bluntly stated that events fail primarily due to a lack of a post-event follow-up strategy.
Yes.
The real ROI of an event isn't generated while everyone is drinking cocktails in the venue. It's generated by the system you have in place for the Tuesday morning after the event.
Which brings us to Abhishek T. He laid out a framework that fundamentally rewires how you view an event's lifecycle. Yeah. Without the event data flywheel.
The event data flywheel.
Yeah, and it operates in four distinct stages. Capture, enrich, activate, and improve.
Okay, let's break down the mechanics of that flywheel. Capture is the baseline, right? Every digital touch point, every session pull, every badge scan is raw data. But enrich is where the actual leverage is created. You don't just log that someone named Sarah attended a cybersecurity session. You layer that scan with your CRM data to realize that Sarah isn't just a generic attendee. She is a chief information security officer at a 2,000-person company who hasn't opened an email from your sales team in 8 months.
See, that transforms a simple attendee log into a highly specific sales trigger. And once you have that enriched profile, you move to activate. Abhishek notes that elite event teams activate this data via outreach sequences from their sales development reps within 48 hours.
48 hours? That's fast.
It has to be. The half-life of event engagement is brutally short. If you wait 2 weeks to follow up with that CSO, the residual goodwill from the event is entirely gone.
Yeah, they've forgotten you.
Exactly. And finally, the improved stage uses that aggregate data to shape the programming for the next event, which is how you cure the first event syndrome we discussed earlier.
I love that. And Abhishek also introduced the content half-life model, which basically rethinks the event as a media property.
Oh, this is a great concept.
Right. Instead of just posting a generic, you know, 3-minute recap video set to upbeat music, top-tier teams extract value across four distinct time windows.
Okay, what are the windows?
Window one is the first 2 hours pushing live social updates and raw poll results while the energy is high. Window two stretches to the 48-hour mark, distributing packaged highlights and quick takeaways.
And historically, that is where 99% of marketing teams stop. The event is over. Let's move on.
Exactly. But the real value is in the long tail. Window three runs from day two to day 30. This is where you deploy long-form derivative content like articles, discussions, or community forums based on the debates that happened on stage.
Yeah.
And window four goes all the way from day 30 to day 90. You take all the aggregated audience poll data and questions, and you build strategic white papers and benchmark reports. The live event becomes a primary research instrument that feeds your content engine for a full quarter.
But wait, if the half-life of event momentum is only 48 hours, and your sales team desperately needs high-intent data to fuel those outreach sequences, how do you actually get the attendees to give you that data?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right, because they aren't going to just volunteer their strategic pain points while walking past a booth. The actual physical design of the room has to facilitate that exchange. Experience design is no longer just a side activity to make things look pretty. It has become the core infrastructure of the event.
Yeah, that brings us to theme three. And Stephanie Hertier argued this point perfectly. She stated that networking requires deep, intentional design to build an ecosystem of trust.
Trust is key.
You cannot just throw 300 introverted professionals in a hotel ballroom with lukewarm coffee and expect them to suddenly share their deepest business challenges.
No, of course not. And Abhishek T provided a masterclass on the mechanics of this. He explained that the top 1% of events engineer participation using a participation stack.
A participation stack.
Yeah, he breaks it down into four psychological layers. The foundation is psychological safety. People need to feel safe before they risk looking uninformed in front of their peers.
Right.
It's why deploying anonymous Q&A tools like Slido generates 3 to 4 times more questions than passing a physical microphone around the room.
That makes total sense. And the second layer is perceived relevance, right? If the keynote or the breakout session didn't feel surgically tailored to their specific immediate situation, the attendee checks out and opens their laptop.
Instantly. And the third layer is social proof loops. Humans are herd animals. Elite event organizers know this, so they prime the room.
How do they do that?
They'll coordinate with 2 or 3 friendly clients beforehand and ask them to throw out the first few questions. It breaks the ice, removes the awkward silence, and creates visible momentum that gives others permission to speak up.
Oh, that's brilliant. Just seeding the audience. And the final layer of the stack is stakes. People engage when something real is on the line. It could be a public commitment or a live vote that actually alters the direction of the programming in real time. It goes far beyond, you know, slapping a digital leaderboard on an app and calling it gamification.
Exactly. And Adelina Tikeshelyadze shared a brilliant, highly practical example of intentional design from the Babel Force booth at CCW 26, which is Customer Contact Week, a major industry conference.
Okay, what did they do?
They specifically structured their booth so that visitors could walk up and explore the software product step by step on their own, completely unbothered, before they ever had to speak to a sales representative.
I found that example so illuminating. Think of it like using an audio guide in an art museum.
Yes.
You're walking around, absorbing the context at your own pace, figuring out what interests you. By the time you finally decide to walk up to the museum curator, or in this case, the sales rep standing at the booth, you aren't starting the conversation from absolute zero. You aren't asking basic questions like, what does your software do? You are already deep into the value proposition, asking how it integrates with your specific systems.
It removes an immense amount of friction from the initial interaction. And this focus on intentional, high-value interaction is driving a massive format shift across the entire industry.
Bigger isn't better anymore.
Exactly.
Okay.
Richie and Kana pointed out that micro-events force significantly better strategic thinking. When you're limited to a small room, you're forced to focus on a specific problem for a specific audience with a highly specific next step.
Rebecca Carmody weighed in on this as well. She confirmed that while large trade shows aren't dying, they are being forced to get much smarter. We are seeing curated, specialized footprints and pre-scheduled meeting lounges completely replacing passive walk-by booth traffic.
Yeah.
The giant, loud, flashy mega booth that just scans everyone who walks by is losing out to the targeted, quiet, high-value conversation.
And we are even seeing this unbundling happen at the macro scale. Julia Solaris noted that massive, 3-day, all-encompassing events are simply becoming too heavy of a lift for many attendees.
Oh, definitely.
They cannot justify 3 days away from their families and their daily operations. Unbundling the ticket passes is becoming a huge trend. He cited NVIDIA's $930 expo-only pass.
Wow.
Yeah, it caters directly to the attendee who just wants to fly in, walk the floor, do their business, and get back on a plane.
It is a ruthless prioritization of the attendees' time. But this level of curation brings up a massive logistical challenge, which leads to our fourth theme. How on earth do you manage all this highly personalized, data-driven experience at scale?
You need an incredibly robust technology stack.
Right. But the conversation around AI and event tech over these past 2 weeks has taken a surprisingly pragmatic turn.
We've definitely moved past the initial hype cycle of AI. Aditya Kala dropped a reality check that every marketing leader needs to hear. 91% of event professionals are currently using AI, but only 16% are seeing any significant results.
I mean, a 16% success rate is abysmal.
It is. But the gap isn't a lack of access to the technology. The gap is in strategic adoption. Lorenzo Dunny's added a crucial point to this. AI does not fix chaos.
Say that again. AI does not fix chaos.
Right. If your current system is a disorganized, messy spreadsheet of badge scans with no follow-up protocol, feeding that into a generative AI tool doesn't magically create a strategy. It just gives you a faster, dumber summary of a broken system. If you automate a weak strategy, you just make things worse at a higher velocity.
You have to lay the structural groundwork first. Alex Adkins shared a really refreshing perspective on what the actual dream for AI should be in the event space.
Okay, what is the dream?
The goal isn't to replace planners or automate the attendee interaction. The goal is to offload the crushing administrative burden, the complex timelines, the endless request for proposal, the run-of-show documents.
Yes, absolutely.
You use AI to handle the spreadsheet so that the marketers have the cognitive bandwidth to actually be human, to read the room, to notice subtle details, and to build genuine relationships.
But for that to happen, the software tools themselves need to evolve. Kelly Berhop made a compelling argument that event tech desperately needs its Canva moment.
What does a Canva moment actually look like for event software?
Well, think about it. Canva completely disrupted the graphic design world, not by being more powerful than Adobe Photoshop, but by being instantly accessible to a novice.
Ah, okay.
Berhop is suggesting that event tech tools currently require far too much heavy lifting. Practitioners need platforms they can actually log into, iterate with, and extract value from today without needing a six-month onboarding implementation or, you know, having to hire a dedicated platform specialist just to run a registration page.
That makes total sense. And as the technology matures into usability, the way we pay for it is also shifting. Michael Belyazny pointed out that pricing in event tech is moving toward outcome-based models. He specifically mentioned a platform called Highbar, which is experimenting with pricing based on actual attendee engagement.
But I have to question the mechanics of that. How do you even measure engagement in a way that dictates a software contract? Does the vendor get paid less if an attendee is just staring at their phone during a keynote? How do you put a hard dollar value on someone paying attention?
Well, it's an evolving metric, right? Usually tracking active interactions within the app, polls answered, questions submitted, meetings booked. But the philosophy behind it is what really matters. It shifts the risk from the buyer to the vendor.
Okay, I see.
Imagine paying only when the technology actually delivers the active participation you want, rather than paying a massive flat annual license fee for a tool that your attendees flat out refuse to download. It aligns the vendor's financial success directly with the event's success.
That's powerful. And when it comes to evaluating which vendor to trust with your event, Jack Hughes provided the ultimate piece of advice.
Oh, this is good.
He said most teams evaluate their tech stack entirely the wrong way. They look at a slick PDF and ask, what features does it have? Instead, they should be asking the vendor who shows up and what exactly do they do when things inevitably go wrong on the day of the event.
Because the Wi-Fi will eventually drop.
Always.
A massive API integration will fail, and an 800-person check-in line will suddenly slow to a crawl. No list of features on a sales deck fixes that moment of panic. The technology is ultimately only as good as the human being standing behind it when the pressure is on.
That is a critical reality check for any marketer about to sign a multi-year software contract. I mean, we've covered a tremendous amount of ground today. We've unpacked how strategy has to lead logistics, how revenue impact is the only metric the C-suite cares about, how experience design is the new physical infrastructure, and how AI has to be functionally adopted.
It's basically the complete, rigorous professionalization of the field marketing function.
It really is.
But before we let you go, there is one final provocative thought to mull over as you design your next floor plan. It comes from insights shared by Pamela Taggart. And she brought up a comparison that is slightly intimidating, but makes total logical sense, the convergence of live events with digital tracking expectations.
Digital marketing has completely rewired the expectations of executive leadership.
Exactly. When you run a digital campaign, leadership expects to know exactly what a customer clicked, how many seconds they hovered over a specific image, and the exact path they took to purchase. Live events are about to be placed under that exact same microscope.
Wow.
Taggart noted that the DOOH space digital out-of-home advertising, like those smart digital billboards you see in airports or transit stations, is already utilizing advanced metrics. They use attention scoring, multi-channel tracking, and anonymized heat mapping to prove that a physical asset drove a specific digital action.
Which raises an inevitable question. How long until we see those exact same sensors, heat maps, and attention metrics deployed across the floor of B2B corporate events?
Exactly. And not to track individuals in an invasive way, but to answer the fundamental million-dollar question, did this specific booth or this specific keynote actually capture attention and drive revenue?
Yeah.
The old excuse of, well, it's an in-person event, it's just really hard to measure, is not going to fly much longer. You are going to have to prove it.
The physical space is officially becoming a highly measurable digital channel.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on account-based marketing, go-to-market, channel marketing, MarTech, social selling, and AI in B2B marketing.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss out on the insights you need to stay ahead.
As you go back to planning your upcoming events, remember the blindfolded relay race. Take the blindfolds off. Build your strategy in lockstep with your sales team, engineer the room for actual participation, and ensure that when you finally pass the baton, everyone is running toward the exact same finish line. We will see you next time.